John, the cow has ate the paper!
And my great-grandma looked at me, and she said, baby, what's wrong with you?
Welcome to The Appleseed, the storytelling podcast from BYU Radio, where your family can gather for great stories from great storytellers in every episode. Stories bring us together, and we hope the stories on the show will spark memories and thoughts that you can share with the people you love. I'm your host, Sam Payne, and our first story is a funny old tale that's a little ridiculous, outlandish, even a little gross. You're going to get a kick out of the story. And we at the Appleseed think that down at its heart, it's about hospitality, how you treat the people who come into the circle of your influence. And it may be a silly story, but the idea of how you should treat people is less silly. The story is called The Cow That Ate the Piper, and it's told for you by the great storyteller Bill Harley. Here's Bill, recorded live in the Appleseed studio.
There was a fellow, his name was Willie McPhee, and he played the pipes. He played the big pipes, you know, the war pipes that scare everybody. He played the Julian pipes, the one you put under your arm and kind of squeeze like that. And whenever he would run into somebody, he would play for the pleasure of their ears, and he'd play for a place to stay. He'd say, my name is Willie McPhee. I'm the finest of pipers, and if you give me a hot meal and a place to rest my head, I'll be happy to play for you. And everywhere he went, the doors opened for Willie McPhee. And so he finally decided he was going to take a tour of the whole island. So he left Scotland. He worked all the way down through the highlands, the lowlands, and he came into the eastern part of East Anglia, and he played. And everywhere he played, he would say, my name's Willie McPhee. I'm the finest of pipers. If you'd give me a hot meal and a place to lay my head, I'll be happy to play for you. And the doors opened all the way down into London, all the way out to Cornwall, all the way up through Wales. And as he walked, his clothes grew more ragged, and he wore holes in the knees of his pants and elbows of his jacket and the soles of his shoes, but still the doors opened to him. And now he was headed home, and the weather had turned, and it was winter, and he came to Yorkshire, and he hoped that the people would open up their doors, and he wondered about their hospitality. But as it happened, he found himself one night not finding a place. And the weather turned, and the snow began to fall, and he was alone on the road. And the snow was piling up, and he thought, Willie McPhee, what's going to become of you? And as he wandered down the road, he tripped over something. He looked down, and it seemed to be a log, this frozen log in the middle of the road, covered up with snow. He said, some poor cart's going to run over this. A horse is going to break its leg. I better pull it out of the way. Well, he dusted it off to pull it off the road, and he saw it wasn't a log at all. It was a body frozen to the ground. And he said, this poor fella, least I can do is drag him off the road so people aren't running over him. He pulled him off the road, and as he pulled him, he had a hold of his feet, and he looked down, and on that poor fella's feet were these brand new brown boots. They looked as soft as leather, and he looked at his poor shoes. They were flapping in the wind, and the snow was seeping through the bottom every time the leather bottom opened up. And he looked at those boots, and he said, you know, those boots look like they might fit me. They're not doing this fella any good. So he knelt down there on the side of the road, there in the dark with the snow pouring down, and he tried to pull them off. But wouldn't you know, they were frozen to his legs. It just seemed a horrible thing to leave those boots where nobody could use them. Now, it just so happened that he had a little tool bag that he used to fix his pipes. And in that tool bag, there was a wee little saw. And he looked at the fella, he said, I'm sorry, but at least your boots are going to be doing so good. So there with the snow coming down, he took that saw, and he just made a little cut. And you know, it wasn't that hard to cut because the legs were kind of frozen. It wasn't bloody or anything, so don't be upset about it. And when he got those boots off with the legs in them, he tied a little string around and he hung them horses behind his neck and he walked down and he said, well, if the weather either breaks and I can get these feet out of the boots, I'll have some new boots. Well, he hadn't walked very far, just another mile or two, when up on the distance on the left, far up on a hill, he saw a little croft, a little farm. And he saw a little light coming out of a window. He said, Willie McPhee, you're a lucky man. There might be a place to stay. So he waded through the snow. Before he knocked on the door, he thought he ought to take a look in the window. And the light coming out of the window was golden and warm and inviting. And he came up and he kind of wiped the frost off and he looked inside. Oh, it was so comfy. There was a big fire burning in the fireplace and there was a man and a woman and they were just sitting down at the table and they had these pots of this hot stew with the steam rising off and his mouth started to salivate and he said, oh, Willie McPhee, you're a lucky man because you're going to find a place to lay your head tonight. So he went over and boom, 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 knocked on the door. Nobody answered. He said, surely they'll hear me. Boom, 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 boom. He knocked on the door. And finally, the door was flung open. There was a big man looking down and said, what do you want? He said, my name's Willie McPhee. I'm the finest of pipers. If you give me a hot meal and a place to lay my head, I'll be happy to pay for you. And then play for you. Not pay for you. Play for you. I don't have any money. I can't pay you. And the man said, I'm not interested. Boom, shut the door in Willie's face. Willie said, how could he be doing that, leaving me out on a cold night like that? So he pounded on the door again. The man opened and said, you're still here. What do you want? He said, I want to play the pipes. I'm Willie McPhee. I'm the finest of pipers. I'll play for you. The man said, I hate the pipes. Boom, shut the door in his face. Oh. Willie couldn't believe it. The man was going to leave him out there to freeze and die there. He pounded on the door. The man said, I told you to leave. What do you want? He said, please, I don't want to freeze to death. Give me a place. And the man said, oh, there's no room in the house. If you want, you can go back there in the barn. You can curl up in the hay up there in the loft. My wife will come out if there's any food. She's going to check on the cow in a little while. So you can just go out and curl out there. Maybe she'll bring some food out to you. Now don't come here again and shut the door. Willie couldn't believe it. But at least he'd be out of the snow. So he waded through the snow. He pulled the door open in the snow. He closed it behind him, and there was the cow, Bessie, curled up in the corner. She was all curled up and lying down. Her head was turned around, almost like a dog curls up, and she was asleep, but she was chewing on the cud like that. Chewing on the cud. Willie sat down. He said, what am I going to do with these boots? Well, you know, Bessie was like a big furnace. So he took those boots from off his shoulders and he stuck them under Bessie. And he sat there and he waited a little while. 10 or 15 minutes later, he pulled those boots out. The legs had thawed. He pulled those legs out. He took his old boots off. He put the new ones on. Oh, they fit like a glove. He thought of that fella and he said, thank you very much. Then he's looking at that fella's poor legs. He looked at his shoes. He said, I bet those shoes would fit those feet. So he put his old shoes on that man's poor legs. Then he looked at Bessie, chewing on her cud. And he got an idea. And he took those two legs, and he stuck them right in her mouth. There she was. And then Willie McPhee climbed up in the loft. And he waited a little bit. And he heard somebody trudging through the snow. And he heard the door being forced open in the snow. And he heard the woman say, hi, Bess. Oh, my gosh! Oh, my goodness! She said, John, the cow has hit the piper! John came waiting to the snow. What are you talking about, woman? Look! Those are his boots. He said, oh, you know, you're right. If they find out about us, there's no telling. We're going to have to bury what's left of them right now. So they dragged those legs out and they waded out in the field in the snow and they got a shovel. And there in this blizzard, they dug a hole and they buried those two poor legs in there and they covered it back over and they went back to their house. Willie climbed down out of the loft and he started thinking. He waited another 10 minutes. And he got out those big war pipes. He tuned them up. He waded out into the snow, got to the place where those legs were, and he tuned up those pipes, and that snow was pouring down on him, covering him up, his head, his shoulders, the pipes, and he started to play. And I wasn't there, but they say that was Willie McPhee's finest concert. He played louder than he'd ever played before. And that man and woman were about to go to bed. They were about to retire when a woman said, "What is that sound?" And they looked out the window, and standing out there was a white figure playing the pipes. And the man said, "It's the ghost of the piper. He's come to haunt us. We gotta get out of here." And they grabbed what little things they could, stuck them in a bag, and they waded down the road and would never see again. And Willie put those pipes back in his bag, waded through the snow, came into the house, found a hot bowl of stew. He sat down in front of the fire, roasting his shins, saying, "Aren't I a lucky man?" And he was just finished on his meal. He's finally getting warm when there was a knock on the door. He said, "Who could be out on a night like tonight?" So he opened the door, and there's this short little fella saying, "I'm looking for a place to stay." He said, "You poor fella out here in a night like this, come in and warm your feet." And the man said, "Yeah, well, there's a problem with that." And that's the story of the cow that ate the piper.
That was Bill Harley with "The Cow That Ate the Piper." I told you it was kind of a silly story. Listening to it, as I mentioned, has me thinking about hospitality, how you treat the people who come within what you heard me call the circle of your influence. And I've got a memory of a time when I was a young man. I had a long drive to make, 3 or 4 hours in a little rattle-trap truck I had back then. I should probably never have set out at all in that thing, but I did. And after about half an hour on the road, the thing overheated, steam spewing up from under the hood. And I pulled off to the side of the freeway and wondered what to do. I was very nearly in the middle of nowhere. But just down off the road, beyond a fence, was a little house. And I climbed the fence, and I went up to the door, and I knocked, and I knocked, and I waited, and I knocked again, and no one was there. But in the yard, there was a water spigot and a little plastic bucket that looked like it was used to feed pets. And, well, doggone it, I was desperate. So I took the bucket and I filled it up with water and I climbed back over the fence and back up onto the freeway, where I filled the radiator of the truck with water. And then it was back over the fence and into the yard to take the bucket back. And what do you know? That water got me where I was going. And when I drove back home, I went by that house again. It was dusk, and I could see a light on, so I pulled off the road, I climbed the fence again, and walked up to the door. I wanted to tell them what I'd done, maybe apologize for using their bucket without asking. It was a young guy and his wife who lived there and answered the door, and we had a really nice visit. We swapped car trouble stories. They asked if there was anything else I needed. They invited me by again if I should ever have any more trouble. And then I said so long, and I drove the rest of the way home. And that was more than 25 years ago. I live hundreds of miles from there now. But about once a year or so, maybe, I find myself in that part of the country and even driving that same stretch of freeway. And I always, even today, watch for that house. And somehow, as odd as it seems, though I've never stopped, I still think of that house as a kind of safe haven, a shelter from whatever storm there might be in the world of my life. It's an unusual kind of comfort for me. And maybe it's a comment, too, on how long it can last in your imagination, in your spirit, when you're in need and you find help. So those folks are a fond memory for me. Their house is a fond memory for me. That bucket, that water spigot, all fond memories. It's a hospitality story that's dear to me. And that's where Bill's story took me. Where did it take you? And who will you take along? Our next story is about storyteller Lynn Ford and her family and the care and hospitality they give to each other. Some of that care has involved the telling of stories. You might say it's where Lynn got her start in storytelling. The story is called How Great Grandma Gets Her Stories, and Lynn's going to tell it. It was recorded live in the Appleseed studio. Here's Lynn.
I have my own favorite storytellers, a lot of them from my family. But my great-grandmother didn't seem to tell a lot of stories. Instead, she would sing in a deep, deep voice. And when I would visit with her in East Liverpool, Ohio, and spend the summers there, I thought, as a privilege, I think my father was trying to save me from getting killed by my mother, because I was that kind of child. We would turn the soil and plant the seeds and pull up the weeds and water the plants. I'm doing all of that with a small rattle that is called shakeray. What is it called?
Shakeray.
And as we did all this work, my great-grandmother would sing to make the time go faster. We hadn't even had breakfast. We'd do the work first and then go back in and have what folks call brunch now. My great-grandmother might sing, "Oh, Mary, don't you weep." And I was supposed to sing my part. "Oh, Mary, don't you weep. And Martha, don't you moan. Oh, Martha, don't you moan. The river drowned old Pharaoh's army. Mary, don't you weep. Oh, Mary, don't you weep. And Martha, don't you moan. Oh, Martha, don't you moan. Well, early in the morning, before the sun is rising, Mary, don't you weep. Good. And Martha, don't you moan.
And Martha, don't you moan.
The river drowned old Pharaoh's army. Mary, don't you weep.
Mary, don't you weep.
And Martha, don't you moan.
And Martha, don't you moan.
Oh, you're good. You're very, very good. Give yourselves a hand. But one day, when I was supposed to be singing my part, I just got kind of carried away. I'd been listening to Mahalia Jackson singing. And when we were supposed to be closing the song to go in to get breakfast, I inhaled and I said, "Oh, Martha, don't you moan." I was about that big. And my great-grandma looked at me and she said, "Baby, what's wrong with you?" And I said what any bright child would say, And then we had breakfast. My great-grandma, I called her my Etsy doll. Etsy in Cherokee or Salagi means my mother, and that is a portion of my heritage. And she made the best breakfasts. She made the best lunches. She made the best dinners, only lunch was called dinner and dinner was called supper. Whole different place from here. And I just loved her dearly. But when all the cousins by the dozens, as they called us, would come at during family gathering time, and when I was 5, I was told there were 29 cousins in the age group from 4 to 10. And so they would just yell, "Cousins by the dozens." And if everybody didn't show up, there were special whistles, depended on whose mama was doing the whistling. Great-grandma didn't whistle. She was afraid her teeth would come out. But you'd hear that whistle. My mother put 2 fingers in her mouth, and she'd make this whistle that was shrill, and I knew I better show up. Well, great-grandma didn't do that. She just yelled, "Cousins by the dozens." And we came and sat on the front porch, and she sat in her rocking chair on the front porch, and she might be darning a sock, a ball inside the toe of the sock, and needle and thread. Nowadays, folks just look at a hole in the sock, they say, "Darn sock," and throw it away. But you didn't waste. And so she would be working on that sock, and she would be telling us a story. A lot of times stories from the good book, but there were other stories and I don't really remember them because she'd tell them in a soft, low voice. Her voice was much deeper than mine. Slowly speaking, rocking back and forth. And I realized she was making us all sleepy. Then she'd say, all right, babies, time for cookie. One cookie, she said, cookie. And milk, and baths, and bed. Now, I didn't like that bath part. That was worse than getting one cookie when you knew you wanted two homemade cookies. But that bath part, the teenage cousins would tell two or three of us to come upstairs. They'd run the bath water. They'd throw two or three of us in the same water together. They'd bathe those two or three, get us into our pajamas, throw us in the beds. They'd call up two or three more. They might not change the water. Throw those ones in that water, bathe them, and put them to bed. I did not like that idea at all. I wanted my own water. I wanted warm water. I didn't want water that somebody might have been blowing bubbles in. And so I tried to stay up. She'd said, bath and bed. And everybody else had run inside, but I sat on the front porch. And my grandfather, my pop-pops, her stepson, was sitting in the porch swing. And just to keep from having to go in with everybody else, I said, pop-pops, where's great-grandma get her stories? They're good stories. And without hesitation, my grandfather said, the moon. What? The moon. Your great-grandma Essie flies up to the moon. She can't fly to the moon. Yes, she can. You see, there's this hootie owl that lives in the tool shed. And he stays there, and when great-grandma knows y'all little knot-headed children are coming here, she goes out there and she tells him she needs some stories, and she tells him that she's gonna give him some of Sunday dinner. And so he's ready, and when the sun goes down, your great-grandma puts on her nightgown and that big robe and those big pink fuzzy slippers that one of y'all gave her, and she puts her Sunday go-to-meeting purse over her arm, and she goes out on the roof of the porch. And she stands there and holds her arms up. That hootie owl shoots out the shed and circles around and then reaches down and grabs your great-grandma with his toes. And he carries her all the way up to the moon. Pop-pops, that can't be right. You don't believe me? Ask the Air Force. One time they saw your great-grandma flying up toward the moon on an owl's toes. And they thought at first she was a UFO. An unidentified flying object. You know about that. But then one of them looked in the radar and they saw those pink fuzzy slippers. And they changed the designation from a UFO to a LOFO. A LOFO. Little old woman flying an owl. Don't you know anything? So they didn't do anything about it, and she flew to the moon, and the hootie owl dropped her down on the moon gently and circled around the moon. They call that an orbit. And she scooped up some of the moon dust, put it in that big purse. Scooped up some stardust, put it in that big purse. Snapped that purse shut, shook it all together, put it back on her arm, held her hands up, and that hootie owl swooped down and grabbed her and brought her back down and said, who's gonna get some Sunday dinner? And your great-grandma said, you. And the hootie owl went back in the shed. Your great-grandma climbed through the window, and she takes off that big robe and takes off those fuzzy slippers, and she opens that big purse, and she puts some of that stardust and moon dust all mixed together underneath her pillow. And when she puts her head on the pillow, she has sweet dreams. And those dreams turn into stories. So when all you little knot-headed children come back down there, she got more stories to tell. And then he sat back and stopped, and I knew he was done. but I knew that my pop-pops could be as big a liar as I could be. So I said, pop-pops, that can't be right. I've been in the shed. There's no hootie owl living in the shed. And I'm the one made the beds this morning, and the only thing under great-grandma's pillow is her nightgown. Pop-pops, I think you made up that story. He said, I did. And about as good at it as your great-grandma is. Now go on in the house. Cookie and milk and bed and bath. So you see, I had a lot of people who taught me about the skills of sharing story. And I'm grateful to all of them. And when I think about that stardust and moon dust mixed together and placed under great-grandma's pillow, I have sweet dreams too.
That was Lynn Ford with How Great-Grandma Gets Her Stories. Is there a special someone in your family that tells you stories? You ever been in trouble and found someone with a little hospitality to help you out? Have you ever had an uncomfortable guest situation that led to misfortune or mayhem? Or have you ever made an unfortunate decision that came back to haunt you? I bet you've got some stories. We hope you'll share them with the people you love. You know, if you're a longtime listener to the Appleseed, you may have recognized these two stories from an old episode back from season 4. Now that we're a video podcast, we're going to be returning to our archives from time to time to re-envision our old episodes as video that you can watch. Now, if you're just listening to the audio version of this podcast, you can find us on YouTube or really wherever else you get your podcast that serves up video. We're excited to share these stories with you in a whole new way. And, of course, we want to thank Bill Harley and Lynn Ford for sharing their tales with us. You've listened to their stories. Now it's time to share some of your own. While you're waiting for the next Appleseed episode, try Kaboom, another BYU radio podcast. It's filled with audio adventures for everyone in your family to enjoy, wherever you get your podcasts.